The Edmonton Eskimos over the weekend clinched first place for the first time in 12 years. They finished the season with an 8-game winning streak, their longest in 33 years. Last time they won 8 in a row in the regular season was in 1982, and funny enough, was also their final 8 games of the season. They went on to win the West Final and the Grey Cup. They hope to repeat that. Also, the last time they hosted the West Final, they went to the Grey Cup and won in 2003, which was in Saskatchewan. So they're hoping that a Western-based Grey Cup can be lucky enough for them again November 29th in Winnipeg. It is time now for Inside the Stripes with Bud Steen, brought to you by Mobile One. 30 years as CFL official. Now he's old and retired, and he is the evaluator. Joins us in studio. Steiner, how you doing?
Not so old. Not so old.
Well, once you're retired, aren't you old?
Well, I guess that's what they'd like you to believe anyway.
Sure.
I'm not feeling that old.
No. Now, we got lots of questions because we didn't have you on last week. Good to see you're feeling better.
Thanks.
This is the final game of the season for the officials before they get the playoff assignments, and you'll be cutting down some guys. So last opportunity maybe to earn themselves a playoff paycheck.
Actually, probably more the reverse. Last opportunity to poop the bed.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, I think we've got a pretty good handle on where guys are going. And what we're looking for is steady Eddie right now. We don't want somebody to come in and demonstrate that we can't rely on them. So that's really what we're looking for last week. We hold our assignments until Sunday night after the last gun has sounded, so to speak. And that allows us an extra hour or two to make any last-minute adjustments before the semifinal assignments are handed out to the participating officials.
Okay. Now, I want to get – everybody saw the Duke-Miami game. Most people have seen the highlights and the kickoff, eight
laterals
that result in a touchdown for Miami. Now the NCAA came out the next day and suspended the crew, said that the guy whose knee was down on one play, that one I don't really buy. They did miss an illegal block. There's no doubt on the play. But as an official, Bud, in that situation, and it happens in the CFL too, so it's on a kickoff, and usually we've got three guys down each side. But usually the kickoff, you kind of know where the guy's going to go realistically, right? Sometimes they might try to go right, and then all of a sudden they stop and go back left. But you don't see a situation like this as officials. How hard is it to stay positionally when you get into lateral after lateral after lateral type of play that we saw?
Well, it takes personal discipline, obviously. And what we would be doing in cases like that, I mean, part of our pregame discussion, morning of the game, discussion amongst the crew would be, all right, if we're in a late game situation and we might have a short kickoff or we might have something like this go on, how are we going to handle it? One of the things that the officials would be looking for would be somebody way across the field, a receiving team player who is positioned in an odd place so that his mate, after he's caught the ball, can throw the ball back across the field to him. We would have the two officials who are furthest upfield, that is closest to the spot where the kickoff is being received, stay parallel with the football, no matter which way it goes. If it's being thrown back towards receiving team's goal line, then the officials there are going to move back towards the goal line so that they can always determine whether the next pass is lateral or not, because that could be determinative of the entire play. If they've thrown the ball forward, obviously it's a it's an offside pass, and the ball doesn't advance from there. The other four officials who are further upfield and on the boundary, two on one side, two on the other, are going to be watching the movement of the other players, because clearly there's going to be receiving team players who are going to try to eliminate kicking team players by knocking them down, opening up lanes for the person with the ball to be able to run for a touchdown. So we're watching then for any illegal blocks, any illegal activity, low blocks, blocks in the back, etc. And throughout all of this, the field judge, who's in the middle of the field, needs to do his best to stay the hell out of the way and just watch the show, because it's obviously, it's a lot of fun when you're in the middle of it.
But there's so much going on. Like, I could see how you'd miss an illegal block.
Yeah.
And I watched the replay on that lateral. Like, I don't even know if when the guy's knee was down, if the ball was even still in his hand.
That one, that's very, very hard to tell. And clearly, the officiating crew had some difficulty with it as well. The explanations that I saw and read on the net, indicated that they spent something like 9 to 10 minutes reviewing the play. That's just far, far too long. One of the directions that we've received from head office on our replay process is, what would the average fan who is watching this game at home, eating a bowl of popcorn, what would he think about this? And let's not get too technical on just exactly what's going on here. I think they spent too much time on it. They overanalyzed it. There was a number of places where they would have been more correct to say, no, that's not a touchdown and the game's over. And Duke, here's your win.
Bud Steen joins us inside the stripes. A few other questions coming in, and you can always text us at 101260 or email us in our SLH inbox, gregor@tsn1260.ca. In the Hamilton-Ottawa game, with about 5 minutes left, Hamilton challenged a turnover due to the illegal tackle. I didn't think a tackle was illegal. That one comes from Denny.
No, that was a very interesting play. Hamilton quarterback throws the ball out into the low flat to speedy Mr. Banks, who attempts to fish his way down the field. He is well outside of the numbers, closer to the boundary, and he's headed upfield. An Ottawa player who, as it turns out, under close subsequent review, was being held, lashes out and tackles Banks, the ball carrier, around the throat. At the same time as Banks is being hit low by another Ottawa player, losing his feet. And basically, he lost everything on the play, top, bottom, and ball. When he was hit, the ball comes flying out. It actually flies almost directly into the hands of an Ottawa player who was so surprised when the ball came at him that he managed to touch it, but he knocked it out of bounds. So the result of the play was a turnover. Ottawa last touched in the field of play, Ottawa football. We have no flag for anything on the play. There is no flag on the ground for unnecessary roughness on the tackle. Had the Hamilton coach been more familiar with the replay rule book and with the standards that we produced and presented to all of the teams this year, he would have known that it was unnecessary for him to challenge the play. It was under automatic review by the command center. We were already looking at it, and as a result of our examination of the play, it's the first time that we applied not a well-known replay rule, and that is, if you have a play on which an uncalled, unnecessary roughness penalty results in a turnover, the replay official can give the ball back to the team that originally had the football. So that's what we did. We gave Hamilton the ball.
Because you deemed it was unnecessary roughness.
Correct. We added the penalty, 15 yards, moved him up, first down, and they carted Mr. Banks off the field for a few plays, and they carried on to lose the football game.
Is that the only instant replay rule that involves a non-flag that you could turn over, you could reverse the turnover?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that one before.
It's interesting. It came as a result, the year before replay was introduced to the Canadian Football League, there was a play in Winnipeg, I believe, where a fellow was face masked. He had received a kick and he was face masked to the ground, and it was such a violent tackle that his his hands just left the football. The ball came down. Kicking team recovered the ball and ran it in for a touchdown. And during the discussion about implementation of replay, some of the coaches said, okay, and let's put this one in too, because that was bad enough that we have to make sure that we can correct that one as well. What the league does not want the replay official to be doing is officiating the football game. We don't want Toronto to be stopping the game saying, oh, hang on, Mr. Referee, the offense was offside on that play. That's not the job of replay, because if we go down that slippery slope pretty soon, we're not going to have anybody on the field. We'll put trained monkeys out there to run the football and set it down and then just let Toronto do everything, and that's just not what this thing is designed to do.
Another question coming in. It seems like Chris Jones is 0-for on the season in Coach's Challenge. Do you guys happen to know the numbers? I think he is 0-for this year, but I don't know. What is he, 0-for 5?
He's 0-for 6.
0-for 6.
Yeah, Coach Jones and I have had the conversation on more than one occasion, and he is very reluctant to flippantly use a challenge. If your first challenge is a free one, there, if you win it, good. Chances are, because if you win two, you get a free third one. But buy two, get one free. But if you lose the first one, there's no downside. If you lose the second one, you lose a timeout. And there's nothing more sacred to the Edmonton coach than timeouts. He uses them very judiciously, very carefully. And, you know, it's important to the teams to have timeouts available, certainly to have at least one timeout left in the last 3 minutes of the game. So he's not quick to pull the trigger on replay. And he's challenged some plays that he probably shouldn't have, and then he doesn't like the result, so now he's determined not to.
I will say the one play that he did challenge that was incorrect on the official's part was the Grimes interference. That was the correct call. We even talked about it after the show early in the year.
Yeah.
That is so. On Jones's case, he should be 1-5, not 0-6. But who? Which coach has the best?
well done, because I was just about to say. And moving on, you know, it's interesting. We've had 96 challenges year to date. The team that has challenged the most is the British Columbia Lions. Coach Tedford there has challenged. The team that's challenged the most is Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but the team that's most successful are the BC Lions.
And Winnipeg's challenged 15 times and the BC's challenged 14.
That is correct. And Winnipeg's at 33% and BC's at 50%.
So how many total? You
96 said, total.
And how many were overturned?
31 successful challenges. So 32.3% of the plays have been changed. Okay, that sounds like a lot, but let me put it into context. So far this year, there have been approximately 13,300 plays from scrimmage in the Canadian Football League.
And only 31 got overchanged.
0.23%. That's pretty good. Now, you know, okay, let's put all the cards on the table. Not every single thing that occurs in a football game is reviewable.
Yep.
But... you know, I think it does support the fact that our guys in stripes are pretty darn good. They do a very, very good job. In fact, as a part of my analysis and review for my input on playoff assignments, one of the categories that I look very carefully at is the accuracy of the officials on their penalty calls. And we've got 5 guys right now who have thrown individually in excess of 50 flags each this year who are batting 100. Pretty damn good. Every flag they've thrown is right.
How many officials?
There are 5.
5 officials?
Yes, who are 50 or more flags who are 100% correct.
Wow. Something tells me those boys will be in the playoffs, I would think.
I would think.
And now, are those 5 at different? Do you know what positions they are?
Yeah, they're different positions. I don't want to drill down too much because I know that this show is listened to across the country. So I don't want to set up any false expectations.
The reason I ask that, though, is if you look at those five, obviously they got to be near the top of their grade, I would think.
Yes, they are.
That they would be leading candidates, barring a major collapse in the postseason, to be the Grey Cup guys.
Yes, correct, correct. You know, another excellent thing that happened this weekend, that game on Sunday here, home team had three penalties. Mm-hmm. Penalties. That's the lowest penalty count that I can remember in over 25 years for a football club. Edmonton ended the year with 10.7 penalties per game average, lowest in the league. They're not right now, in terms of total count, the lowest. Calgary's got 185 penalties and Edmonton's got 193. But Calgary's got a ball game to play this weekend, and chances are they're going to exceed the total count of the Eskimos. So, good on the team. They understand disciplined play, and it really supports what the league has done in terms of making officials available to the teams so that they can reduce the flag count. Unfortunately, we didn't get where I had thought that we might get. I had hoped that we would get down to something in the order of an average of 21 a game. We're not as of week 18, so that was before this past weekend's numbers were put in. 23.86 is our average flag count per game, which admittedly is too high. We get more teams to buy into disciplined play, and we can get that down. You know, the other rules that we've adjusted this year have really produced some good benefits. We've got an additional 50 yards of passing on average per game over last season, and I think that's what the fans are looking for, is more passing, less running. We've got slightly greater net offense per game than before. The games are coming in under 3 hours. The convert rule really added an interesting wrinkle to the game. And right now, we're running at 85% success rate on one-point converts, obviously down from 99% last year because of the extra distance. The two-point converts have gone from 30% success last year to 66% this year. So the teams are much better at putting the ball into goal from the 3-yard line.